Bikini and the Brain, Bikini and the Brain. One is a trainer, the other gets gains. They're podcasting hosts, their muscles they boast. Ah, Dinky, Bikini and the Brain, 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 Brain.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Bikini and the Brain podcast. I'm here with my lovely co-host.
Me! It's me, guys, you know, your friend. It's me.
Me, your friend. That's what we're going to do. Your friend. You just go by me. Hey, it's me. Like, share.
Isn't that you?
It's me. Yes, it's you. So, we have a good topic for today. And actually, I don't know really anyone who would be better suited to talk about this topic besides you, actually.
Okay.
You know? Like, who else would be is good to talk about this? You know, maybe Natalia Mello or something like that? But that's... Yeah, so she's not active, though, anywhere. And so, yeah, you're probably, like, the one of the best to talk about this with.
Yeah.
So, the topic today is...
The evolution of bikini and how it's grown throughout the years. Things have changed, people have changed, shows have changed, and I think like a lot of people don't really realize how it used to be. And you've been coaching bikini competitors since the beginning, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've seen it happen with your own eyes, and you've seen how things have progressed from the suit to the posing to the physiques. A lot has changed in the span of, let's see,
2009?
Yeah, 2009, I believe, was the first bikini competition to now. So that was like 11 years or something.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's been 11 years.
Yeah.
Because I remember when it first came out, and I was like, what's this?
Like,
mm-hmm. What is this? Yeah. And it was funny because I didn't have like any bikini athletes the first year.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, because we didn't really know what to do with it, you know? It was like, oh, it's like, it's... Originally, it started as like, it was like a fit. So this is how the story was told to me. It was like a Flex. So the Flex magazine model search that was done at the Olympias was basically the bikini competitions of back then. They didn't have it. All they had was, they had figure, they had women's bodybuilding and men's bodybuilding. That's all they had. Then they had the Flex model search. So you had all these girls and guys that were like the men's physique and bikini people of today doing this model search. And then one day the model searches were getting like more entries than the bodybuilding shows. And I think they were just like, oh, let's do this. Let's do something like this for the division. And then the next thing you know, bikini was born.
Oh, bikini was born. Yes. I remember, you know, seeing these bikini competitors, and I saw them when it kind of first came out, and I was like, whoa, this looks interesting. And, you know, I think it took a good few years to get what they wanted like correctly. I feel like it's way more consistent now than what it was back then. And I feel like when it first began, you had like two types of people. You had those like bikini model types that, you know, maybe did the whole modeling thing, or, you know, won bikini contests at their local pool party thing. And then you had the figure competitors that wanted to downgrade to bikini, but they were still kind of like really big for bikini.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of like there was no in between at first, it felt like to me. So it was kind of like all over the place there for a few years. And yeah, I think we should probably talk about how the physiques have changed, because that's the most important thing, of course. Talking about the evolution of bikini, the physiques, they have really changed. And it was, you know, back in the day, you had those two people, you had those bigger figure competitors that wanted to, you know, try a bikini, and then you had those model types. The model types were, in our standards today, they would be way too soft, it seems like, way too soft. And then, of course, the figure competitors, I feel like maybe their leanness was about what it is now, but they were bigger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really changed a lot. And if you look at all the divisions, they've all really changed a lot. If you look at women's physique of a few years back, women's physique of a few years back is basically figure now. And actually, figure now is even leaner than women's physique a few years back was, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy how everything's changed, and bikini wasn't as hard as hit as like women's physique was, or wasn't as hard as hit as figure was in terms of like how much more muscle is required now. But if you look at like the figure competitors of back in 2009, that's almost where bikini is now. Like they have the same build as the figure competitors did back then. Maybe a tiny bit less muscle, but a lot of them are like right there.
Mm-hmm. But different muscle in different places. Like bikini competitors have more glutes and not as much shoulders as they used to in the old school figure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And not as much like, you won't see any like quad separation like type of thing. But it's like little things, but they're, if you look at a 2009 figure competitor and a 2020 bikini pro, like it'd be pretty hard for the untrained eye to tell the difference. Like mm-hmm. it'd be like, oh, they're both competing in the same division. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of crazy. So it's kind of cool that it's done that, because originally we just didn't know what to do. So it was almost like just a regular bikini competition where it was that you'd see it like I don't even know where they have other bikini competitions. I guess a beauty pageant type of bikini competition.
It wasn't like pool parties sometimes. Like in Vegas, you'd have bikinis.
I know they have that, like, that tan company has a bikini contest. Okay. I forget which one it is. Mm-hmm. But, and they do pretty big ones. But yeah, it was a girl who was kind of fit and had good curves, and it wasn't super hard at all. Mm-hmm. Like, most of them didn't even have any lines of six pack at all. Mm-hmm. Posing was, you know, a lot different. The suit was totally different.
You
want to tell them about your suits, like, and how it was when, because you were just starting in the transition of the suits going from.
Yeah, kind of. So I guess this is when I started actively competing, would be more like 2012 era.
Okay.
So before me, it was totally acceptable to have like an off the rack bikini. And when I say off the rack, I mean like you can go to like Walmart or whatever and just get the newest swimsuits. Yeah. And the cut wasn't, it wasn't cut any special way. It was just what they had. You would see a lot of the diaper butt, bottoms a lot. That was before they had this, like, what is it? Butterfly shape.
Yeah. Butterfly shape.
Yeah. Or the scrunch in the back.
I remember my go-to was Target. I'd be like, go to Target, get this one, because it's not too big on the back, but we can't go too small, because you can't show too much. It's a family show.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, has to be at least like 50% coverage on your glutes, but there's a couple at Target you could get, and that was the game plan back then.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, you didn't see any rhinestones for a while, but like, I did compete in a show in 2011 once, but it was weird, because I did have like an off-the-rack suit, but I sent my suit to a lady that did figure suits, and she added on like connectors for me on just my, I can't remember if it was my top or my bottom, but just to add that little something, because if you had it like too much, you know, you want too much. But yeah, gosh, the suits have really changed since then. You would see patterns back then too, like some stripes, some polka dots, like like I said, like just like Target suits and stuff. So it kind of like took to like, I want to say like 2012, and that's when you started to really consistently see like the more bikini type suits that we see today. But the rhinestones were just like so minimal, I feel like.
Yeah.
Even the bottoms were more like a V bottom rather than like the butterfly, but just like little bits of stones here and there. Some girls didn't even have the stones, but that material was kind of like what we're using today.
Material, mm-hmm. Yeah,
hologram or sequins. So you would also sometimes occasionally see the tie sides as well. And it was like not as fun as they are now. They're way more elaborate.
The only thing I liked about those suits back then was it was a little bit easier for like girls to have a bunch of different suit options and colors. Like they would go to a show with, you know, three different options of suits. And now, like if you need three different options of suits, you gotta have, you know, $1,500 to spend on those, you know, versus less than $200 for the last one. So that was the only thing I liked about those. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the suits now are just so much more flattering. Like they're cut to the physique a lot better than just, you know, slapping on a suit.
Right. They're way more elegant. Yes. Yeah. And I will say like the backs are, you know, a lot smaller. I think that's like the biggest transformation. It's like they're a lot smaller now.
Yeah.
But that's fine because we're in a sport where we're supposed to, you know, show off our hard work. So I ain't mad at that.
Actually, in Colorado, until 2 years ago, they actually still required 50% glute coverage, which was so frustrating because, like, girls would have to wear one suit for a local show, you know, spend $500 or whatever on their suit, and then have another suit for nationals. And I'm like, we're the only state left that has this. Like, why are we doing that? You know? And so finally they changed it a couple years ago because everyone was complaining. Even the suit makers were complaining because they were sending suits back because they weren't able to do the show. So they'd have to send suits back. And they're like, why is this in the rules it says? Mm-hmm. And so finally, like, our chairman switched it where it's like the same as a national suit. So yeah, that's still, that's how recent, how like it's still evolving. Like, it's just a point of how it's still evolving. Yeah, it's crazy.
I think another big point to speak on is the posing. Oh my gosh, the posing is so different now. Really, from when it first started. So like, man, it was just kind of like, do you remember the back pose that was like cross leg? They were doing that like when I was like competing as an amateur. Yeah,
that was 12. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The cross-legged back pose, I don't see anybody do that anymore. Which, I mean, technically you could if you wanted to, but no one does. Also, when you did...
The look back of 2000.
Oh, the look back, yes.
The look back pose.
Or sometimes you can even see, like, the back pose we do now, but the legs were way more out. And then sometimes you would even have some girl, like, look... Or not look over the shoulder, but, like, put their weight onto one hip from the back, too. Yeah, it definitely is way more elegant and consistent now, I would say. And you know, again, this is just like them trying, everyone's just trying to find the groove and what looks best. And in the front pose, you would see some different ones. I mean, the front pose is, though, you still see the older ones today every once in a while. Now there's like, I would say the most common front pose now is that one that I do. What do we call it?
It's like front side pose. Front side pose. Like pretty pose, and we call it
pretty pose.
But yeah, the thing is too, with you girls that are like listening to this, this is, I guess, mainly like a female podcast on this one. Our male audience, sorry. We'll talk about men's physique soon too.
Yeah.
But the posing is such an important part of this. And this is what I run into all the time. Like, this is just a snippet for your improvement here. I always like to like make sure that you guys are just like educational to some degree, where you're like learning how to be better at the sport during the podcast. But one thing that's very, very important is that you're staying up to date with your posing and you're following the trends of posing. You'll see a lot of like bikini competitors who maybe they've done one show or they've done a few shows, or maybe they got a pro card back in 2012, and then they're posing girls, but they're not keeping up with the latest trends because they're not interested in it anymore as they used to be. They just do it as like a job now, like, oh, I'm a posing coach, but they don't keep up. And then you'll see all their girls at one show doing the same exact posing routine. And it's outdated, it's 2 years old. And 2 years old is a dinosaur compared if you're not keeping up with the trends. So like having a posing coach that actually is keeping up with to date with things and is actually researching the shows is super, super important. So that's one of the things I feel like really sets you apart from, like, let's say you have like a local level coach who never goes to nationals or never goes to pro shows, and he's just in his neighborhood or her neighborhood of wherever it is. Like, they're never going to learn the new things that are coming. And by the time you learn them, it's going to be already changing because they're learning them as they get passed down to the local level when they start at the pro level. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very important that you stay up to date with your posing. Actually, it's kind of funny is, Anya, she's, you know, she works like with Team Elite Physique, of course, but that's part of her job, is actually to watch every pro show that she can watch just so she can tell me what are the new changes, what's changing in bikini posing, what's going on new, what are the things we should be looking for that might become a trend. And so I'm constantly being updated, and then she'll like send me like the quick shots, because I'm not going to watch every single pro show. She watches literally every single pro show to see changes in different countries that might be impacting the United States. And then like, what are the little things? So we're trying to stay super cutting edge on posing, because I can guarantee you that I know what's happened. We've beaten girls just because of the posing scenario. So like, we were cutting edge on posing, the other girl's physique was better than ours, but we killed her on posing and we win, you know? And that's something that like, I always want to have that as like a tool that we can be ahead on. So for you girls that are listening to this, you know, make sure, you know, your posing coach is staying up to date. Make sure you're watching as many pro shows as you can so you can see what the trends are. You know, just this year, things have changed a lot again. You know, now people are giving a wider upper body. They're exposing the lat a lot more now. You know, that wasn't a thing before. We weren't super concerned with the V taper and the balance of the upper body to lower body as much as we are now. Now it's so important. So things are really, really important when you're like studying the sport. If you want to get better, study the posing. Make sure you're working with the right posing coach who's staying up to date, that's still doing relevant posing. So anyway, that was my quick snippet on educational part of like this whole thing. It's so important to stay up to date.
It can definitely make or break you. And it's like, you can definitely tell when somebody didn't do their research on stage and then they go on stage and it's just like, oh, maybe they're not looking or researching the right videos. They're from a long time ago, because they're, it's like the posing's just old and they kind of stand out in a bad way. So yeah, that's definitely a good tip. And shout out to her for looking every week
You know where I learned that, too? Where I learned that, I told her, like, it's like, hey, I need to you to stay up on it, because I can't watch, you know, 2-3 hours of posing two times a week. But where I learned it was, I was in, I forget what state I was in. I was at a pro men's physique. I was there at a pro show. And it was back in 2000, it was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago maybe. And all of a sudden, one day, the men's physique guys were facing like straight ahead. Mm-hmm. We went from this like the more of like the running, we're called it like the running man men's physique pose. And then all of a sudden one day everyone was facing straight ahead. And I was like, when did this happen? And it was literally like every guy in the show, and my guy was still doing running man, mm-hmm. came out of nowhere. And I was like, how did I not see this? You know, I didn't see this happening. And it just, you know, I was like, okay, I could never let that happen again. Because all of a sudden, the men's physique guys, that didn't happen overnight. That must have taken like 3 months, 2 months, but I just didn't see it for that mm-hmm. period of time. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention or whatever. Right. And so now I'm like, okay, from now on, every pro show, I need to see what's happening, like every mm-hmm. single pro show. And so now, so that's where I learned that lesson. So I don't want to ever do that again. So you definitely don't want to do that if you're going to like nationals and all of a sudden everything changed.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the reasons why things are changing and getting better and improving is because our talent pool is expanding, and it's crazy how popular bikini has become. And a lot of people, like, for example, will kind of be like, oh, why aren't you doing as good as you used to do? Like, it's nothing to do necessarily with my physique. My physique has gotten better, but the talent pool has expanded, and there's girls competing from all over the world. It's crazy that it's just like, this sport has grown so much, and I understand why it's so appealing, but also because they offer more shows internationally. I feel like when I first did my Olympia, there might have been like a few competitors that weren't from the USA, and now it feels like half the competitors are outside the USA. So they're definitely like creeping up on us here in the USA. And there's crazy, crazy talent from, you know, other places other than America. It's like, it's ridiculous. And I'm just like impressed by all the new competitors every year, and I see them and I'm like, oh man, they have so much potential. So it's gonna be interesting to see how far the sport evolves even in like 5 more years. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's come a long way just in the last couple, you know? Mm-hmm.
And so, I think like ever since probably like, what would you say, like 2015, 16, 17?
I know where the biggest impact happened for sure.
Yeah.
It was 17, 18.
I disagree completely. I think that's when it started to become more consistent.
Well, I'm saying with the international. Because when IFBB, so there used to be, I guess we can talk about the organization because it actually matters, you know? So when IFBB, so it used to be two different things. So it was like IFBB that was like international, and then you had like the NPC, which was like United States. And then someone else was managing basically the international part of the mm-hmm. IFBB. And it was different. Getting your pro card back then wasn't like you won a show and then you got your pro card overseas. It was you would have a resume built up like you did out here in NPC competitions in the United States. And then overseas, you would like, hey, I won 4 overalls in my state. I want to petition now for a pro card. And then you get a pro card that way. So it was like it was really weird. No one really knew how to get a pro card, when they were going to get accepted for a pro card overseas. And then I think it was 2000. I want to say 17 is when it happened. Jim Mannion kind of took over the NPC International, so NPC Worldwide, which is like the IFBB outside of the United States too. And they started doing Olympia Amateurs. And so now you're seeing a lot more Olympia Amateurs. So now it's like, hey, you they call it, you win and you're in. And so now there's no guesswork, there's no weird things, people getting resumes that maybe like, you know, building up on small shows and getting pro cards. It's like, the best of the best win an Olympia Amateur and they get a pro card right there and then. doesn't matter where you're from now. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I think the talent pool really surged, you know. So in, I think we're talking about it a little bit different. So the talent pool just expanded so dramatically because now you can have, maybe before you had a girl in, whatever, in Sweden who didn't have enough shows that she could compete in to get a pro card, to build a resume because there wasn't any shows in Sweden. So she'd have to travel to, she'd have to fly to somewhere in Europe, you know, seven times and hopefully win six of those shows and then maybe get a pro card. But that's really expensive for someone. But now maybe she can just do one Olympia amateur, win a pro show and actually get the recognition and then start competing as a pro with a sponsor and then start competing in the United States because she got a sponsor from her local country. So the pool has really changed things like that dramatically. So that's why you're seeing all this new talent come out of different countries. It's nuts, like what's coming in different countries.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and especially Canada, like, I will say in the United States, I think Canada for the next 2 years or so will probably take like a majority of the pro cards at the national shows, mm-hmm. because they just made it this year where if you have your green card in the United States, you can go to a national show. And so, and a lot of Canadians do have that. So there's a lot of girls in Canada who've only had the opportunity of getting a pro card in Canada at like two shows a year. So it's like two pro cards in bikini in Canada. Might have been three until like 2 years ago or a year ago. And now they're able to compete at a lot of different U.S. national shows. And these girls are so good because they've been waiting to get a pro card. I mean, we give out probably like 80 bikini pro cards a year in the United States. So you can just imagine the talent pool is probably around like 30 or so bikini pro cards that would have gotten girls that could have looked pro every year, but only two of them are getting it. So for the last few years, 28 girls that should have been pro haven't been. They're going to just impact the United States national shows so dramatically. Mm-hmm. And also the Olympia amateur shows outside of the United States overseas. And you're already starting to see it happen. They're starting to get this huge rush out of Canada because they just didn't have the opportunity to get pro cards before. So it's like, it's pretty cool to see because they deserved it. You know, a lot of these girls really deserved it. I see some amateurs over there and I'm like, whoa, how are you an amateur? It's crazy.
I also feel like Brazil is also...
Oh, they're nuts.
It's just like a culture thing and probably a mix of good genetics as well. That's like, it's a big sport for them. So they're also like, they're good.
Yeah.
Obviously. But backtracking a little bit, I feel like since probably about 2015-16, the physiques have been a little more consistent. So whereas I said before, they're, you know, as things are getting better, the physiques are getting a little more consistent as far as like the same amount of body fat and muscle. But what is always improving is the body structure and things that we can't necessarily change. I mean, take our recent Olympia winner. That's a structure that's hard to duplicate.
Yeah.
And, you know, with more talent, you'll see more crazy structures. So just to clarify, bikini isn't getting more muscular. It's not getting more lean. It's just all the right muscle in all the right places, I guess you could say, and just ideal structures. So it's kind of like a natural selection thing. The more competitors you have, the more likely you'll find these crazy genetic structures. So I think that's something to also keep in mind too, because I hear that every once in a while. Oh yeah, bikini just keeps getting more muscular every year, or keeps getting more lean every year. No, it doesn't. No.
Yeah, I think it reached its max at this point. At like probably, I would say probably like 17, 16, it reached its max of muscle.
Like maybe my look in 2013, 14, 15 at the Olympia probably would have been a little soft for today. But I feel like, you know, a few years after that, it's been more consistent throughout. So I think, you know, that's what we keep it in. And I just have to point that out because I hear that all the time. And I think people also go off of like local shows. Like they see a girl win at a local show and they'd be like, oh, that girl was super muscular. That girl was super lean. But you're looking at a local show winner. You're not looking at the Olympia. The Olympia is what to go off of. And I would say, like, would you agree with me, like, the top, I want to say, 5 or even 10 at the Olympia, we don't have the same structure necessarily, but maybe the same amount, close to the same amount of leanness and same amount of muscle. There's no, like, odd one out that's super, super muscular in comparison or super, super lean in comparison to the others.
Yeah, it's all within a couple percent.
So I just wanted to debunk that myth that it's not getting leaner, it's not getting more muscular, it's kind of evening off, it's just the structures, itself are changing.
I think, yeah, I think where it makes it look like that is the posing is different. The
posing is different.
Mm-hmm. You know, now people are opening up their lat, they're being a little bit stronger up top, they're being a little broader with their, like, posing up top. And before that wasn't really a thing. So if you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, they're way bigger. But no, they're just posing differently now. The conditioning, it really can't get any leaner, or else it would be, like, pretty shockingly lean. I mean, they're already pretty lean. They kind of maxed that out. I think any further than where it's at now, you're going to start having, like, striated quads and striated glutes. You know, they're already pretty fit, lean. You know, they're like at that. We like to say, you know, they're 13, 14% body fat. And then just so you guys know, that's a really lean body fat. But when you're talking about, like, reaching 11s and 10s, that's women physique pro level body fat. And that's just not happening in bikini, you know? So you wouldn't be rewarded for that.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, just all those people out there that just like to say it's getting this and this every year. Not really. It's pretty consistent these last few years. So it's not going to really change just the structures itself.
It's changed since 2009, but since lately, it's posing has changed, you know, presentation has changed, opening up a little bit on the back has changed. So it looks bigger to the untrained eye, but yeah, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. And you know what else is really cool that has evolved since it's become a bigger sport? It's just different shows, and they're more consistent shows. There's pretty much a pro show almost every week for bikini. And they're in really cool places. Yeah. I mean, there was some that were in, you know, different countries when I was competing a few years ago. But now it's, like, really, like, all over the place, which I love because it's another opportunity to travel.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what? It's, like, I always, like, give the story of the time I went to India, which was a crazy experience. But it's been, like, you know, what I have to really give them credit to is they're a lot... they've really figured it out, and it's super organized these days when it comes to, like, pro shows, and they're super, like good at promoting, and people show up, and it's a good show, and it's, you know what I'm saying, the overall feeling of the show is, like, amazing.
Yeah.
And not to say it was bad before, but it just keeps improving, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool is that there's a lot of opportunity to see really cool places. So, like, just as, like, an example, we're going to do two team trips a year where people can go to different countries and have a really good, like, bonding experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something it's new. We weren't able to do that before. And so now it's really turned into a cool thing. We had just a couple weeks ago, we had our girls go to Colombia. We had, it was like four girls and one guy go to Colombia to compete. And it was really cool because the cost of living out there was a lot lower cost. So we had in the room, there was like, we ended up renting a mansion, which is nuts, right? We rented a mansion for everyone. The whole mansion for 5 days was like $6,000. And we divided that by like eight rooms. So it was like really inexpensive per person to live. There's three kitchens. There's like eight people in different rooms. And it was just super cost effective and a great trip. And there's actually someone there that was like from Colombia that was like staying at the house too. And so like we got to like know, like, see everything, go to all these different cool places, meet a whole bunch of cool people. We ended up winning a pro card while we're out there. Caroline won her pro card in bikini. And it was just like a great experience. And everyone had, you know, it was quite cool too because like makeup was like $34.
Wow.
I know, right? Because the dollar was a lot cheaper over there. So it was actually, what's crazy is the entry fee for that show was only $150 too. Mm-hmm. For a pro qualifier, that's a low cost. Like, a pro qualifier in the United States is like $300, $350. So the actual cost to go there was lower than the cost of going to like USA's because of the makeup, the entry, the tan was cheaper, the room was cheaper, and then the flight wasn't even that much more. It was only like $700 versus like $300 to Vegas. So it's cool that cool experience for everyone to go through. So I think, you know, you should, if that's something you want to do, like you have that opportunity now to see the world and do a show, you know, it's kind of like you're going to pay for a show which is going to cost whatever, it's going to cost $1,000, give or take, like, you know, some money depending on what you got to get. Why not turn it into a vacation too?
Right, that's my thoughts on it too.
Yeah, get two for one.
I want to do some international shows this year just so I can explore, have a little vacation, and just go somewhere that I wouldn't really be able to go if I didn't, you know, compete. I think that's a great learning experience, and it makes you way more seasoned when it comes to traveling and different parts of the world. I love it. It's so cool. It's like a different challenge too when you compete overseas because you're competing with a different group of girls. You're like, also, it's kind of challenging too, like I guess the final days of your prep when you're like jet lagged a little bit, it's just kind of like a new challenge. Like there's different curveballs that are going to be thrown your way, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just like a kind of a way to adapt. I know I've had a few shows overseas where it's just kind of like, oh, who's doing tanning? am I going to get tanned or, you know what I mean? Or something like that, but nothing serious, but it's just kind of like a, like, you know, if you are going to do a show overseas, just expect the unexpected and be prepared.
Yeah, it's a fun time. Just know that your disadvantage is the same as everyone's disadvantage, right? So, like, if you're worried about it, everyone's worried about it. Your tan is a little bit off, everyone's tan is a little off. Like, so it's one of those things, like, when I hear people, like, come back from shows, like, oh, that show sucked, the tan was terrible. I'm like, well, did everyone use the same tanner? Like yeah. Well, like, well, then you have the same disadvantage. Like, if everyone's tan's green, then that's who they're comparing that day, is green tan. That's how it goes. So it's the same disadvantage. So, yeah, it's a great time. And the cool thing is, if you stay, like, a day later, like, I remember when we were in Korea that one time, we had a really cool trip. We went to this, like, old Buddhist temple, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully it was Buddhist temple, I'm saying that right. And it was, like, thousands of years old. It was, like, super old. And then we went to the streets, and then we went to and got, like, kimchi, like, street kimchi. And it was, like, just so cool to do that and, like, see all these things. And then we went to Japan, and we saw another temple. Yeah, but it had, like, there was, like, mountains there and all these things. It was pretty cool. Tried, like, real Japanese sushi. And it's just cool to, like, hey, you're already paying for a show anyway. Why not go for it, you know? So, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair statement. And I just, yeah, it just makes you a better competitor overall, I think, whenever you're, you know, in a situation where you're not expecting. It kind of teaches you lessons for real. Like, it just teaches you to be more independent and maybe do things on your own more, and how to adapt to certain situations when it comes to your flight and traveling in general, all that good stuff. So I wouldn't change any of my experiences for the world, and I plan on doing more of those.
Yeah, your India experience was crazy. You want to tell them about your flight in from India, like your drive from the plane to the hotel?
I will say my India experience was very
authentic.
I had never been to a country where I actually felt culture shock, but I did there. I definitely felt culture shock. I traveled to Pune, India, in, I think, 2014. And, I landed, and it was nighttime. It was like a 15-hour flight. Almost 16 hours, I think. I landed, and it was dark. I want to say 11 p.m. And we had, like, this five-hour cab drive to Pune, because I don't think there's too many airports in India. And the cab drive was, like, all dark. The cab driver didn't speak English. It was just us, like, me and a few other competitors. And we were driving through these roads and streets and, like, forest area, like, places that you wouldn't even think, like, a car could go through. But I was just like, what is going on? And I don't know what was happening, because the cab driver wasn't speaking English. But every so often, he would stop the bus or the cab thing and, like, meet up with somebody, and out in the forest just popped this guy that went to the window and just started talking with him. And I don't know what they were saying, but it was just like, we're like, why are we stopping right now in the forest? And this guy would just come up, a guy would come up and talk to this guy and then be on his way. And that happened a few times, and I'm like, what are they doing? Like, what?
He's an Uber Eats driver.
This was before Uber. But, yeah, that was interesting. And, like, when we were driving to the cab, it was like...
So these are dirt roads?
Dirt roads, some of them railroads, and some of them was through, like, neighborhoods. And then, like, it had to be, like, 1 a.m. And there was, like, people, like, partying on the streets and stuff, like, as if it was just, like, it was just, like, noon or something. All these kids and, like... They look like they're having a fun time, but I'm just like, this is weird. Like, this is so different from the USA. Why are they out right now? Just like, I don't know, playing soccer and stuff. And then when we got to the hotel was nice. But outside the hotel was, like, really, like, different from what I'm used to. A lot of panhandling and lack of public toilets as well.
Oh, yeah.
Their public toilets were just, like, a hole in the wall with pieces of wood. So that was different. That was outside the hotel, though. The hotel was nice. The venue was not the best.
Hold on a second. Hole in the wall with a piece of wood.
Or a hole in the Ground, I'm sorry.
Oh, just a hole in the ground?
Yeah, with like two pieces of wood. No toilet paper, no sinks.
So just a big hole in the ground?
A hole in the ground with two pieces of wood where you would put your feet. And then, like, there was no water or Purell or toilet paper. I guess you had to bring your own.
This is crazy. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I guess that's just the way they do it. They just expect you to bring your own toilet paper, I guess. Huh. I don't know. I should research it.
BYOT.
Yeah. And it was just, like, a totally different way of life. And the venue itself was, like, it was, like, really... Oh, you know what was kind of cool, though? It was, like, you'd walk out and, like, it was almost like the paparazzi. They would crowd around you and be like, oh, my God. And this was everyone that looked like they were into fitness. Yeah. It's almost like they were so impressed, like, oh, my God. Oh, like anybody with like adult, they would be like, oh,
that's funny.
But that was, it was very flattering. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funny as Amanda Larson had similar experiences in India. And it was funny as she was telling me the story of they were like prepping food for her. Like there was like her boyfriend went and got her food. And it was like chicken because they didn't bring any food over, obviously. Uh-huh. And so he went to like a local restaurant or whatever to get a bunch of food. And then like, the guy was like cutting the food and like, it's kind of weird. He was like holding, like it's different culturally, you know? But while he was like cutting the food, like cutting the chicken to be cooked, he was like using one of his feet as a brace. And like, so he was using one of his feet barefoot on the chicken and then the other hand on the chicken and then cutting it with like his other hand available. And he was like, I don't know if this guy was just weird or if it's cultural. So he just didn't say anything. He's like, well, when he cooks it, it doesn't matter. It's going to be all, you know, it's going to be clean. And so he didn't tell her that until after the trip, but he was like watching her eat the food and it was like just kind of laughing to himself because what's he going to tell her, you know, like she's got to eat. So like he didn't want to make her not eat. So then Amanda was telling me this story. She's like, I was so mad. But it's just different like culture shock. Now, I will say that's like the biggest probably culture shock that I had. Like, everything else is very normal. Just fun, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just different. We're just not used to it and they probably come over here and it's totally different, like what is, you know, what's all this, you know? So it's just again, it's like different culture, all that. So I mean, that was just one thing, but like I remember it's just kind of a little bit like unpredictable. Like they thought the pre-judging is one day and then they went and moved another day and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on, but whatever. I made it through, but I got to wear a cool jewel thing on my forehead. I don't know what they're called, please forgive me, but they gave us those to wear and I thought that was super cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
And we got our own little track suits. That was nice. That was so nice. I felt very welcomed there. They were very appreciative of us being there, you can tell. But yeah, that was just different. And, you know, their food was so super good, though. I loved their food. Oh, my goodness. And I remember I went and I stocked up on their candies and stuff. I thought it was amazing. And you can't.
Every time you go somewhere, you like have to get.
I wanna, because I think it's very interesting to go like grocery shopping in a place that you're not from. It's just like super cool to see what they're eating and what kind of food they have to offer. It's an experience. I love going grocery shopping.
Yeah, but you know what's crazy is that everywhere we go, different country wise, there's always a 7-Eleven every time.
Yeah.
And so, what was that one song? What was that place we were singing?
Happy Mart. Is it Family Mart?
Family Mart.
Family Mart.
We were like, Family Mart?
Family Mart. Let's all go to Family Mart.
Every time we'd see that, it was like, it became a thing.
It
and
was
then
in
it
Tokyo,
was like,
by the way.
And then there were so many of them. We're like, oh, God, we got to do it again.
I know.
We had to do it. But every time we go, we try to find, like, new candy and new things. And, like, then we did that taste test. That was fun. And you taste some weird things. We had the in Japan.
Oh, my video, my YouTube video.
Yeah. And
that was fun.
There was a lot of like weird, like to us it's weird, but there was like egg candy and then there was fish candy and it was like, we didn't know what we were buying because it was in a different language.
Yeah.
And so we'd buy it and then we would just like put it in our mouth and see what happened, you know? And then sometimes it would just be the, like there was one thing I bit into, I remember, and it was like a sponge of water, remember that one? It's like I bit into it and just water just like, it like bit into a sponge, I wasn't expecting it and it just like poured out of my mouth, like which wasn't ready for it. It was, that one wasn't my favorite, but they had some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see like the culture, you know?
Mm-hmm. They, in Japan, I remember I was like addicted to those like sugar-free jellies with the konjac jellies or something, the zero sugar ones.
Yeah.
Oh, those are so good. And then I had a very nice few girls, they knew I liked that because I put it on a YouTube video that these were my favorite, and then they like sent me boxes of those I think that's what's called konjac jelly. But yeah, it's like a little jello with these little chunks of something in there. It's really good. I love the texture. Good stuff.
Remember, there was another thing. It was a different language. It was a coffee. So they had these like coffee things in, I think it might have been Korea. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, these are really good tasting. They're only 15 calories per. I was drinking like, because they're decent size. I was drinking like 3 of them a day. Just because they were so inexpensive and it was different. It was like cultural thing. And I was like, oh, these are great. These little coffees. 15 calories. And then Ashley looked at the label. She's like, you realize this is in like milliliters, not in like serving, like one can serving, it's milliliters, and this is like a 500 milliliter thing. I'm like, what? like she figured it out because it was all in a different language. Like you couldn't even abbreviate anything. Like, you couldn't make anything out. And so I figured out I was drinking like 3 of those a day, and it was like 70 calories per, and it was like all sugar based. And I was so mad because I was drinking like, I don't know, 300 calories from sugar every day. I was like, no wonder they're so good. So you gotta be careful out there too. Yeah, that's funny.
Exactly, be careful. But anyway, if you guys have the chance to travel for a show, I highly recommend it. It is so much fun. You get to experience a new culture and you get to see new places. And it's just like, again, it's a learning experience. So that is definitely something I would suggest.
Yeah, and get with your guys' coach and like see if maybe a bunch of the teammates want to go somewhere and make it where it's like cost effective and rent an Airbnb. And I think it's safer too because you're all learning the country and you're in a group and it's mm-hmm. it's fun. You know, I know we're going to be doing them at least 2 to 3 times a year because everyone had such a good experience. The only downside to it was originally there was like 10 people said they were going to go, mm-hmm. and then a lot of them backed out and it ended up only being like 4. Mm. And so, you know, it was like, it just made it a little bit harder because then it became a little bit more expensive. So
right. Just
commit to it. You know, especially if you're one of like my athletes, like if you say you're going to go, because we're all depending on you going. We've got a big like mansion because of so many people said we're going to go. We could have got a smaller mansion and saved a lot more money. We got 12 rooms because all the people that said they're going, but we ended up only booking 8, I think 8 of the rooms and 5 of our people went. So like, it was, you know, could have been a lot more cost effective. Just be smart about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what about anything else you want to leave on with the evolution of bikini? What you expect it to go, where you expect it to go from here?
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like you expect it to kind of stay the same.
Yeah, I mean, somewhat just better. I mean, there's always room for improvement with anyone. And, you know, just those, I think, genetic freaks are going to shine more too because, you know, again, we're just, depending on who shows up and stuff, it's like, you know, we're kind of getting more consistent with things. So the person that does win, you know, assuming everyone has the same work ethic and the same amount of muscle and structure, or same amount of muscle and same amount of body fat, the only thing you can improve on is structure. So that would be the only thing.
Yeah, I think that's the only, I think the same thing. I think that structure is going to be the only thing that improves. And also, we're going to start seeing the evolution of like absolutely flawless balance.
Yes.
I think because that you can still improve on and not make a girl more muscular. So, and I'm already seeing that kind of start happening is where balance is just such a important thing. So from upper to lower, from front to back, you know, from muscle to muscle, just mm-hmm. balance being just such an important factor now too.
Right.
And so, yeah, so the upper level girls, they already have it, but you're starting to see the girls that are working their way up having it too. And even it's going to be even more important on an amateur level. It's already more important on an amateur level. So now it's just becoming more and more important. Balance, balance, balance. Because you can't get them any bigger, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, so there you go.
All right. Well, I hope this was useful for you guys or just learned a little bit and had a little fun with it so you can kind of see. And I highly suggest you go onto YouTube and watch like a bikini competition from 2009 and see exactly what we're talking about. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool to see where it came from. It's come so far. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time, we will see you later. And if you like this podcast, please give us that 5-star rating. So we can be happy campers.
Yes, Ashley will be sad and depressed if you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry if you don't.
She goes into a dark depression when she gets 4 stars. And I just have to talk her out of it. It takes 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
See you guys later.